Just at 9, it's dry for the moment, 47 degrees in Kenosha, 46 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's always a great day on the morning show when we can welcome back into our studios Amy Grile, who is Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Foundation. And we have had conversations before about the Kenosha Community Foundation and the important work that they do, but it is especially gratifying that we can have not only Amy Grile with us today, but a couple of other guests joining us to talk about other matters related to the work that they do. We have with us, and we'll introduce him a little more extensively in just a little bit, real estate attorney David Hughes, who will be talking on the important topic of how one can include a nonprofit organization in your own estate planning. And we'll be talking today with Jody Williams, who is a instructor in theater at Bradford High School. And Bradford High School happens to be the primary beneficiary or recipient, if you will, of one of the funds that is overseen by the Kenosha Community Foundation, the Marvin S. Martin Fund for the Dramatic and Forensic Arts. So we will talk a little bit about how that fund came to being in the first place and the way in which it has been a great help, or will be a great help to the theater program at Bradford High School. So we're so happy that all three of you are here. And Amy Grile, let's begin with you, and welcome back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg.
Remind our listeners on the most basic sort of level what the Kenosha Community Foundation is, and then we'll dig into the really lovely specific story of this particular fund. But first, in general, remind our listeners what the Kenosha Community Foundation is all about.
Right. So the Kenosha Community Foundation is a nonprofit charity located right here in Kenosha to serve the interests of local philanthropists in the Kenosha area. Certainly, we want to direct our grants and scholarships to those worthy individuals and organizations working and living and pursuing their dreams here from the Kenosha County region specifically. We are about 100 years old, and we issue grants and scholarships from endowed funds. So those are funds ideally set up for forever that would issue of the interest earned on the fund annually a grant or a scholarship. So it's a lovely partnership between a visionary donor or family and a grantee or scholarship recipient that wants to pursue their work into the future.
So explain to somebody who is blessed to have some funds to distribute out into the world, explain what the benefit is to utilizing their funds in this way through an agency like the Kenosha Community Foundation versus just taking out their checkbook and writing a big check to somebody. I mean, that might seem like a very simple way to do it, but of course, There are other ways and arguably much better ways to try to serve your community.
Sure. So there's many forms of philanthropists, some that want to make a direct gift to their favorite nonprofit. That is certainly a very valued role in the community, and you could take a portion of your wealth and give it directly to a nonprofit to put to use directly within, the calendar year. However that looks. We're working with individuals that wish to establish an endowment that would pay out in perpetuity. So that's the difference. It may be a smaller amount of money, but over a much longer time frame. So whereas you could gift $100,000 to the Kenosha Literacy Council all in one swoop, with us, you would give essentially maybe a $10,000 grant, but that would last for all coming time. So it's much more impactful in my view because it, will sustain an organization for the long term. They can really plan for that long term. And just as our foundation is a nonprofit, we love endowments because that means the money stays with us as well for the long haul. We retain the principal. So we can steward those resources in the community, assured that we have the power and the resources to really, make transformation happen right here locally forever.
Right. So I suppose for somebody who would like their legacy to really live on long after they themselves are gone, this might really matter a lot. I mean, as opposed to writing a nice check for how many thousands of dollars, and that organization gratefully receives it and spends it, and it's gone. And in a sense, your legacy, in terms of you and this organization you care about, it in a sense ends right there. And you are talking about a legacy that goes on in perpetuity.
Exactly.
So explain why you have invited attorney David Hughes to join us today for this conversation.
Well, David and I have been acquainted for the last few years, but working with David at the same law firm is one of our board members, Roberta Puntillo. So I'm well acquainted with their agency and certainly the quality and credibility of those that represent clients throughout the region. So David and I have worked together on a couple of fundraising projects with the Kenosha County Ceremonial Courtroom, incidentally. And when I referred to Roberta Puntillo, his colleague at the law firm, to say, is there an expert that you would recommend in estate planning? She said, well, just reach out to David Hughes. So I did.
Glad to have David Hughes with us. And in just a little bit, we will reintroduce Jody Williams, who kind of completes the trifecta here as we talk about a very specific fund that is managed by the Kenosha Community Foundation, namely the fund of Marvin S. Martin, the Marvin S. Martin Fund for the Dramatic and Forensic Arts. First of all, how many different funds, roughly, are we talking about under the auspices of the Kenosha Community Foundation? And how many of them bear the name of the primary donor?
Yeah, we have about 60 what we call component funds. So even though all of our assets are pooled in a single investment vehicle, each fund is accounted for separately and certainly can be named for the fund holder, what we call the fund advisor. So all 60 of our funds have unique names reflecting the family traditionally or generally, but certainly we can name the funds, you know, to suit the interests and needs of the donor.
And I like this name because it is the name of Mr. Martin, but also very much spells out exactly what his interest was, his concern, his intention.
Absolutely. I mean, for myself, I didn't even know that that was a forensic arts. You know, it introduces a new language. It's not like a, you know, science, forensic, you know, like.
Yeah, something very different.
Very different. So it's lovely that we're introducing a whole new almost language into our local foundation.
When somebody is wanting to set something up, are you sometimes sitting across the table from, for instance, Marvis S. Martin himself? Or in many instances, are we talking about one of his descendants? I mean, typically, when does this process begin in terms of setting something like this up? And with whom does it begin? Typically?
That's a really, really good question, because in the 2 years that I've been at the Kenosha Community Foundation, I'm generally, over the last 2 years, been working with individuals that want to give in their lifetime. So they want to certainly be involved and give a gift that they can basically be involved with and perhaps get to know the student that's receiving the scholarship or get to know the nonprofit that's receiving the grant. But most community foundations, their bread and butter really is this what we call legacy giving, where it comes through the estate plan. You know, I guess it's not unfortunate, but it's just an unrealized opportunity so far that the Kenosha Community Foundation has really leaned into this legacy giving, where we can equip individuals to think much more long term, and ideally the gifts are much larger and more impactful if they're given after death, when the full breadth of their wealth is realized. And I think it's generally that's the ideal, is to work with legacy giving.
Very good. So maybe you can kind of introduce us to this particular fund just a little bit more, and then we're going to turn to attorney David Hughes to find out a little bit more about kind of the mechanics of how something like this gets put together.
Sure. So basically, it was a short encounter, because this particular trustee on a trust reached out to me with like full awareness of what they wanted to do and had done a lot of the investigating on their own time. I mean, many times people will come to me and say, well, this is what I'd like to do, find a way to make it actually happen locally. And then it's me picking up the phone, making a lot of calls and trying to find out exactly how do we realize this intention. But in this case, Todd Berry, the trustee on this given trust, had already reached out to Bradford High School, contacted Jody here, who's with us today, and put all things in motion for me. So I was kind of the last person on the phone chain in this case, because it was just, he just needed a vehicle rather than giving the full gift to, say, the Kenosha Unified School District. He said, well, why don't we take a quick detour and endow this and invest the assets? And then, you know, so it was kind of almost like an afterthought in our case, but nonetheless, we're thrilled, you know, that somehow, some way, you know, the credibility of the Kenosha Community Foundation was introduced into this conversation and really added value to the whole process.
Absolutely. And by the way, we probably haven't taken sufficient time to talk about that whole matter of investment and the fact that when you are, in a sense, entrusted with somebody's assets, that you do things with those assets that they themselves probably could not do. And that's a really important component in why this might really make sense for somebody to do.
Absolutely. Without the interest earned on the establishing gift, it really would prevent us from making that grant or that scholarship award. So with the interest earned on the asset, we assume historically it's always been a roughly 5% market growth year by year. So that's historically what we would call our distribution or spending policy. So we can turn around, take the asset average of that particular fund, take 5% of it, and then issue it out to the community nonprofit or public institution in this case that's going to put the money to work. So.
And there it goes. Very good. Well, I think it's probably time for us to bring in Attorney David Hughes to help us understand some of the mechanics of how this works. And David, I want to make sure that you have a chance to clarify something that I asked you about before you even went on the air. I asked you if you had had any hands-on participation in the creation of this particular fund that we're kind of focusing on today, the Marvin S. Martin Fund, and you actually, you know, pretty firmly assured me that the answer was no, that in fact, if you were, you probably wouldn't be here talking, because these kind of conversations are typically privileged and privileged private conversations, and you wouldn't be sharing freely this kind of information, potentially sensitive information shared by a client.
That's absolutely the case.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about the work that you do at your own particular law firm.
So I'm an attorney, and I specialize or focus my practice on a number of different areas. But what's relevant to us today is my focus on estate planning and on estate administration. Estate planning is the process by which a client would come to me or another attorney and look to make a plan and prepare for the disposition and transfer of their assets after they pass away. Who do I want to receive my funds? And from my perspective, how are we going to make sure that those assets get transferred from where they are to where the client wants them to go? Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is estate administration. After somebody has passed away, an attorney like me or someone else will work with the clients or the former clients, loved ones, and family to figure out what they had, what they wanted to do with their assets after they passed away, what structures did they put in place to transfer those assets, and then take things from where they are to where they're meant to be.
Mm. So most people have heard about people having a will. So what is the relationship between somebody's will and what you are talking about in terms of setting up trusts and that sort of things? Is that something that's part of someone's will or done in conjunction with the will?
They are related concepts. And without getting too deep into the weeds, a will is one way to set up an estate plan. In using a will, you are committing yourself to transferring your property through what's known as the probate system, which is a court-supervised process for transferring certain assets that are subject to court supervision and then transferring them to their ultimate beneficiaries as designated by the will. The alternative is what estate planning attorneys call non-probate transfers. Those are transfers that would occur outside of the probate system and without the supervision, oversight, and perhaps sometimes burden that comes along with a probate administration. One of the common mechanisms or common arrangements to make a non-probate transfer is something called a trust, which a lot of people have heard about, and it's worth explaining what it is. A trust is a special arrangement or agreement made between three people. There's a settlor, there is a trustee, and there's a beneficiary. A trust gets created when the settlor gives property to the trustee, and the trustee doesn't own that property themselves or for themselves. That property is held in trust for the benefit of the beneficiary. And trust can be a very flexible way and very useful way of owning and managing property for a wide variety of different reasons. But in estate planning context, what's usually happening is the settlor is giving property to the trustee, who is also themselves, to use for the benefit of the beneficiary, who is also themselves. but they've set up alternatives and backups so that when something happens to the settler, they have a new person who will step in and become the trustee and a new beneficiary who will ultimately benefit from the assets that are subject to the trust, so that after the settler passes away, the new trustee will step in, take care of the property that's subject to the trust, and administer it according to the settler's new rules and distribute it to the beneficiary or beneficiaries that they designated according to the terms that they laid out in the original trust agreement.
Hmm. And what would you say are the primary advantages to somebody doing that? Or what sort of a particular purpose would it most often serve to create a trust like you just described?
So there's two principal advantages from my perspective. The first is that by setting up your estate plan to use a trust, you can avoid the probate system,
right,
which allows you, in many instances, allows your beneficiaries ultimately a somewhat faster and more efficient way to manage and oversee the transfer of your assets. There's also coordination benefits, as I like to describe them. If you're using a trust and you make the appropriate arrangements to have all of your assets transferred through that trust, you have a single vehicle or a single, I sometimes like to call it a single dial. You have one dial with which you can control and arrange the disposition of your assets after you pass away. So you're not arranging a transfer of a bank account here and a piece of real estate there. Everything is under one umbrella, and you can make all the adjustments in a single place. If you decide I'd like to leave more to one person, or perhaps in Marvin S. Martin's case, over time you decide I'd like to endow a fund or leave a legacy to charity, you can use your trust to make that arrangement.
Hmm. How complicated and lengthy a process are we talking about in terms of setting up a trust? How many meetings, for instance, are we talking about? And how many documents are we talking about that must be created?
The process itself is fairly simple. From my perspective, and when I work with clients, it's usually a three-part process. Part one is a initial meeting where you and the attorney sit down, or the client and the attorney sit down, have a conversation about what you want to accomplish, how you want your assets to transfer, who you want to receive them, and just as importantly, who you want to be responsible for overseeing that process after you pass away. After you have that conversation and explain to the attorney what you want to accomplish, then your attorney takes that information, goes back into their office, and turns that initial description, that explanation, into a set of documents. And the specific documents involved vary from client to client and situation to situation.
Sure.
But the important one that you're going to be looking at is the trust itself. There's a number of different names for the underlying document. You can see it called a declaration of trust or the trust instrument, but you're looking at one principal document that would be created. Then there needs to be a second meeting where the attorney and client come, sit down together, review, make sure the document prepared does what the client wants, and then you need to sign it. And then after that meeting is where there is a third round of work, and that's the funding of the trust. I always like to explain that a trust is a little bit like a tropical island, in that you can have all sorts of fun and interesting things set up to happen on and in the trust. But a trust can only affect property that is subject to the trust. So after you've created the trust, as a client, you need, or as someone with a trust, you then need to make arrangements to make sure that your property gets into the trust at or before your death. As I like to say, you've got to make sure you get those assets on the boat to Trust Island.
And so are we talking about dealing with your bank, for instance?
It would be conversations with your bank, with your financial advisor, with your broker, with perhaps your HR department at your employer. If you have a 401k or retirement benefits or insurance benefits, it's your employer. And as part of my practice and most other attorneys, we'll help walk you through the process. Unfortunately, we're not able to do it for you because if I were to call up one of my clients' banks and say, we need to make some adjustments to their beneficiaries or to how their assets are owned, most banks are not going to take that call without a detailed authorization from the client. It's generally more efficient for me to provide the instructions to the client on take this paper, take this set of instructions, hand it to your banker and say, this is what we need to do. If you have any questions, please give my attorney a call.
And there it is. And good things ensue. For those of you just joining us on the Monday morning show today, we have with us not only Amy Grile from the Kenosha Community Foundation, but attorney David Hughes, whom we've just been hearing from, who does considerable work in terms of estate planning and helping to set up trusts and so on. And we're talking very specifically today about something called the Marvin S. Martin Fund for the Dramatic and Forensic Arts. And we're about to bring into the conversation Jody Williams, who teaches theater at Bradford High School. So Amy Grile, all that David Hughes was just describing is something, of course, you're quite well acquainted with. How does this relate to the setting up of this particular fund that we're talking up today? I mean, is this an example of a trust?
Correct. So in this case, one of the trustees, so Todd Berry was the nephew of Marvin S. Martin, and he's taking forward the wishes. Marvin passed away over a year ago, and he's sort of dispensing of all those assets and reached out to me. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, this was kind of like the last step of a long story because he had already made some contacts with the very, very end beneficiary, which is the Bradford High School performing arts programming. So Jody is here because at the end of the day, when all of the dust settles, she's going to be the one that's stewarding those assets or those grant dollars into real action. So I'm thrilled she could join us at kind of last minute notice here.
As am I. It's great to have you here. Jody, are you in a position to tell us anything about Marvin S. Martin? I mean,
well, I learned a fair amount about him the past month. Mr. Berry contacted us at the end of August, beginning of September, and explained that his uncle was a Bradford graduate from way back when Bradford was still downtown in its original building.
Where Reuther is now.
Where Reuther is now. And that the performing arts and forensics had been such a huge part of his life that he went into it as a career. He himself was a theater teacher and an author, and he wanted to continue that specifically for Bradford in its current iteration, which we were talking before we came in here today, that how amazing is it that the teachers he had and the program that he went through 60 years ago had such a profound impact that he wanted that to be a part of his legacy moving forward. And he wanted to ensure that other students that he had never met, would never meet, had the opportunities that he did.
That really is something. And in a sense, that lengthens the legacy still further, that it's not just Marvin S. Martin who graduated all those decades ago, but it's his teachers who helped lay the foundation for who he ended up becoming. In a sense, this is their legacy living on as well, if not in name.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
spirit, for the most part. So this is not somebody who you had ever met directly, and
no.
this is not someone who was coming to productions and so on.
No.
So this came as quite a surprise, I'm
it
guessing.
It did. Quite a happy one as well. So when Mr. Berry came to us, he asked us what it was that we didn't know at the time that it was going to be an endowment. He just said, you know, my uncle passed, and he wanted to leave money to the program, and asked us what we needed and how we would envision using those funds. And so we sat down, myself and my colleague, Christy Geidner, and went through, well, what do we need and how many, what would the impact of spending the money in this particular way be? And we created a list and we kind of picked our top three. And then we went back to Mr. Barry and said, well, here's what we're thinking. And what we decided really lined up with what he wanted. Hmm. And I'm not sure if that's what he intended when he asked us to put together the list, but he really liked what we landed on, which was creating a guest artist position. So the idea being, that's really where we felt it would impact the most students. Because if we have a guest artist come in, they can work with a large cast, they can come in and participate in classes during the day, which for us are two different groups of kids. Mm-hmm. And we could put it into equipment, but the students aren't necessarily going to feel that impact the way they would if they were working with an outside director, an outside choreographer, or a music director. And we've had some really fabulous guest artists come in from Milwaukee and Chicago in the past to work with the kids. And we are just thrilled that, first of all, that this is going to bear his name, because the gentleman deserves to be remembered for gifting this kind of opportunity to students moving forward, but also that we hope we can create something that will have a reputation that people will want to come in and work with us, and people will want to come in and make that impact on a large group of students. So, and Mr. Barry really liked that idea.
That's great. Amy Greil, when somebody comes to you and is setting things up, typically is it the way Jody Williams just described it most of the time, that conversation happens, in a sense, away from the Kenosha Community Foundation? Or sometimes are you also a part of those conversations about exactly how should this be used and what did the donor most intend?
Sure. I've been at the foundation just 2 years, and in philanthropy, that is like a breath. That is nothing. Okay. My experience has been so limited thus far with individuals that are talking about legacy giving and estate planning. However, it's happened on a couple of occasions where they're really like sort of brainstorming with me, and I'm sort of presenting opportunities and options and, you know, doing a lot of the legwork, as I said, you know, for them. But certainly this is fabulous when the trustee, the donor themselves, is so committed and so determined to actualize like these wishes. It's extremely powerful to observe at my seat that, you know, it wasn't half-baked, it wasn't asking me to define things for them, but really a determination as far as, yeah, we know what we want, and let's make it happen.
Right. Well, and I appreciate the fact, Jody Williams, that you and your colleagues thought about this long and hard and clearly feel really good about coming up with something that you feel like really aligned with what Marvis S. Martin, you know, might have really wanted and would have really appreciated. And I could imagine a lot of scenarios where somebody might not take the time and think about it in those terms, but you and your colleagues clearly did.
Oh, it's very easy to say, oh, well, we've got X number of dollars in maintenance on this system, and we could easily do that.
Or we need one more spotlight or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you could, but ultimately it has to be what's going to affect the most students, what's going to make the biggest impact. And you can have, and as the technical director, I can't believe it's about to come out of my mouth, but you can have great theater without having a lot of great stuff. Okay. But ultimately it's true. It's what you can give to the students. And we felt that the professionalism in the community around us, and there's a lot of it, we are in such a good spot right between two major cities, and Kenosha is a fabulous community for the arts, whether people realize it or not. There's a lot going on here. Mm-hmm. So we felt that was really where it was going to be the best.
Yeah. It might be good for you to take a moment to kind of describe to any listeners who aren't really acquainted with the scope of the theater program, for instance, at Bradford High School, and Kenosha Unified overall, for that matter. But to give them some sense of just all that goes on.
Oh, sure.
And the scope of the work that you do.
Specifically the Bradford Theater Program has been very active and incredibly large for a very long time. I've been a part of the theater program for 23 years. We just retired Holly Stanfield, who really built the program into what it has been for so long. We expanded, I want to say, about 10 years ago, once Indian Trail became a comprehensive high school. So all of those theater programs are really, really well supported by the district. We are really fortunate in a way that a lot of other school systems are not. We've got a lot of support. And our music programs as well. We kind of take for granted, I think, that we've got Orkfest and Choral Fest and all of these music festivals and Bandorama. Other communities don't have these things, and they bring in artists as well. It is such a unique, unique program. And even expanding on that, Carthage has a fabulous concert facility. Parkside has the Range. We've got so much going on in this town. I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. I mean, I started working, I was commuting from Milwaukee. We eventually moved down here. My sons went through the theater program here. And, you know, I tell people my son's theater habits supported his psychology habits. So, you know, that's how he got scholarships for college.
Yeah. So
it isn't just about producing performers. It's about creating great kids who go on to be a part of the community in bigger ways.
Sure. Well, and of course, so much of this kind of high-level theater is about community.
Yes.
It's about collaboration, and so it's an absolutely stunning example of that. So over the course of a school year, then, give our listeners some sense of just how much theatrically happens at a place like Bradford.
Well, Bradford is doing, we are doing 5 shows this year, which is on par with what some professional theaters do. I'm saying the number of shows is on par. We are working hard to be upper level, and we always are when you have a rotation of students that come in. And the same quality-wise with the other 2 schools. They are incredible programs, and they have great teachers. We do 3 main stage productions, which requires a lot of effort. We have daytime students who build all the sets. We bring in guest designers to work with them. And we are committed to live musicians, so that is something else that we bring in live pits for the shows. We have a small theater. We have a studio theater as well, so we'll be doing 2 productions in the studio theater. We compete. Our first competition is coming up on October 26th. We'll be competing in the Wisconsin High School Forensics Association. I think the name of that just changed, and I'm going to really kick myself for that one. But they compete regionally, sectionally, and then hopefully statewide. Students can compete individually at that competition and then move on to national scholarship competitions. We are participants in the International Thespian Festival. We have gone every year for many, many years, and then we went every other year because they changed the rules. So we couldn't go every year, but we always found a way to get students there in some way. Indian Trail and Tremper are taking a show to Scotland this year to participate in the Fringe Festival, which is huge, and that will be end of this school year into next summer. They'll be doing that. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
And you've just touched on something else that I don't think should be taken for granted, and that is the fact that although there are certain things that happen on your stage versus the Indian Trail stage versus the Tremper stage, that one of the loveliest things about this whole theatrical matter in Kenosha Unified is the way in which we have students fluidly moving from high school to high school. That is, not every student in the cast of a show being done at Bradford is necessarily a Bradford student, but might be from other high schools as
correct,
well.
Correct. We made the commitment that we wanted students to have the best opportunities, and that we want them to work with multiple directors. We have lots of gifted directors in the district, and students can audition for any of the shows and be cast in any of the shows. This is the best way to put it. It's sometimes transportation-wise, we try to work with students on that. A lot of times, just for mechanical purposes, the freshmen will end up kind of at their home base schools, but certainly not a hard and fast rule. But yeah, and that is something unique to Kenosha Unified. We have a lot of schools outside of our district that say, how do you do this? How does this get supported? And they will ask us kind of for our model. And we do audition as a group. We do all of our auditions, not all of our auditions, but a large portion of our auditions happen together. So everybody sees all the kids. And we are certainly sending kids in different directions.
Right.
If we think that a student's going to be particularly good in a role at Tremper, then we'll say, hey, you should go talk to Nick Cicerelli over at Tremper. And we'll send them in that direction if we think that's going to be the best opportunity for them.
So it's not like football.
No,
I mean,
no.
We don't see Indian Trails and Bradford transferring players back and forth, though we have an extra kicker. No, it's just, I mean, so there's just this lovely cooperative, collaborative community model. And that's really about a culture that's been created. Chiefly, I would say, by Holly over the years, but all of the participating teachers in the entire theatrical program of Kenosha Unified have in a sense, bought into that and made it an amazing reality over the years.
Yeah,
so.
And it works for everyone. It takes a lot of work on the part of the adults.
Right.
It takes a lot of work on the part of parents. I mean, I cannot diminish the role that parents play in getting their kids all over town to these things. But it is a really unique experience, and we are thrilled to talk to everybody everywhere we go. At every conference we go to, and people say, how do you do that? We will talk their ear off about
it. So. Well, it is a feel-good story for sure, and such a success story on so many levels, and especially the way in which the students are being so splendidly served. So, Amy Grile, tell us more about kind of the kind of mechanics by which this Marvin S. Martin Fund is functioning at the moment. I mean, like, has the first check been written, or is that yet to come? And how will this sort of look over the coming years?
Sure. So the first step in our process at the foundation, after the preliminary conversations, is to set up what's called the fund agreement. In that agreement, that is a technical, legally binding document that establishes the name of the fund, the terms of the fund. Is it endowed? Is it what's called a spendable fund? Kind of the conditions that those assets are transferring from the individual to the Kenosha Community Foundation. There is a legal transfer of assets, so it's not as though you give a gift and then you can retain control and tell us what to do with it. It has to all be in that fund agreement. How do you want that gift to serve the community? You got to throw it all in, front load it, and then, you know, the signatures of the donor and the signatures of our foundation that we actually will bring that fund agreement, we actualize the fund agreement, and then the establishing gift is crucial, because that's when everything kind of clicks into place, where that establishing gift will now create that level of principle. We would not be issuing a grant if the value of that fund drops below that establishing gift. So that initial, you know, it may start small and then grow over time. You certainly can add, you know, over time. And I do believe there's more resources perhaps coming into this fund, but the establishing gift was received last week. So now it is in force, and now begins the time sort of ticking, and we would issue the first grant a year from the establishing gift being received. So that gives the asset enough time to accrue interest, and everything happens kind of on a yearly clock with us, so that we wouldn't make a grant until there is sort of an increase in the value of that asset over the course of a year.
Very good. And so roughly a year from now, one way or another, Bradford High School will be receiving its first installment of funding from this fund.
Absolutely. We look so forward to finding out, you know, that first preliminary, I guess, guest artist. So we are now going to be tracking and part of the story, essentially, of Bradford's performing arts programs. And I'm so, so glad for this, like, welcome opportunity to create a new partnership and to do so with the school district, not in the form of a scholarship, is especially exciting because that gift will not just support one student in right. their future endeavors, but like you say, it's the classes, it's the performances after school hours. Like, there will be many, many more beneficiaries for this single gift than a single scholarship really can provide. So I am just thrilled. So thank you.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll be excited to hear what happens. Are you already, it sounds like you're already planning in terms of who might be the first guest artist to be the beneficiary
ideas.
Of this. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, we will be very excited to kind of follow this story further.
Well, and Greg, I just want to make one quick note that those from the public that are hearing about this story can also contribute to this fund. So there's a public link on our website where you can contribute, and the public, you know, at large can make small contributions and things like this. So it's not like only coming through the trust or only through the family. These are set up to be publicly serving and publicly supported.
Right, and there are plenty of people who care about high school theater and high school theater in Kenosha and specifically at Bradford. So yes, anybody who shares that interest and passion is welcome to be a contributor to this fund. Amy Greil, for anybody who would like still more information about the Kenosha Community Foundation, either on their own behalf or on behalf of a loved one, what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, just give me a ring at the office. My direct line is 262-618-7361. I am standing by to take calls, and really it's a whole, you know, I enter the picture at any time in this thought process. So it's not as though you have to have exactly everything, you know, figured out at that time, especially if you've never done this. We want to really encourage so many of our, you know, local families and individuals that are moving through the world to consider philanthropy. That's the biggest charge of our foundation, is to say we have nascent philanthropists here that don't know that this path exists.
Right. This opportunity is there.
Absolutely. Mm. So come talk to us if you want to give a gift back to the community that is so special and endeared to you. So yeah.
Very good. Amy Greil, Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Foundation. David Hughes, remind our listeners again of the law firm with which you practice and how people could connect with you.
Thank you. I'm with Pentillo, Camille, and Hughes. We're in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And the best way to reach us or to reach me would be by phone. My phone number is 262-657-3500.
Very good. And Jody Williams, what's the next show at Bradford High School?
Next show at Bradford High School is Adam's Family opening on Halloween.
I have a voice student who is in the cast
nice.
And who's very excited about it, and I am hoping to see it, and I hope a lot of people will make a point of that. And again, when does it open, did you
we
say?
We open on Halloween.
All right. A fun, fun show based, of course, on the classic television comedy. Well, my thanks to all three of you for being my guests on the morning show today. Jody Williams from Bradford High School, David Hughes, real estate attorney, and of course, Amy Greil, the boss, the executive director of the Kenosha Community Foundation. Great to have all three of you here on the morning show, and best wishes to all of you with the good work that you do.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
You. Tomorrow on the morning show, I will be speaking with the author of a really interesting book called Meeting the Moment. The author of the book examines some crucial moments in American history in which presidents have had to demonstrate exemplary leadership in order to shepherd our country through some of its most serious challenges. So that will be tomorrow on the morning show. Also, I'll be speaking with the author of a lovely new children's book called Gracie Under the Waves that carries a beautiful environmental message for young readers. On Wednesday, I'll be speaking with Jim Schatzman, who's with the Choral Arts Society. They have an amazing concert coming up this weekend called Simply Folk. And joining Jim Schatzman in the studio will be three of the headline musicians who are going to be part of Saturday night's concert, Mark Paffrath, Maritha Paffrath, and Zachary Scott Johnson. And that will be on Wednesday's morning show. On Thursday, more music. We'll be previewing for you the next theatrical production at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, Carrie the Musical. And we'll be speaking with Mary Carr, who is visiting assistant professor for theater arts at Parkside. Also, we'll talk with Bob Hasty and Peter Rodriguez with the Kenosha Symphony about their concert coming up this weekend. And on Friday, from the archives, sports writer L. John Wertheim talking about his book Strokes of Genius, which looked back at one of the greatest tennis matches ever played, the 2008 Wimbledon final between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. We're replaying this in honor of Rafael Nadal's great career in tennis, which is about to come to a close with his impending retirement. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Clouds have given way to some sunshine, but we do have the possibility of scattered rain showers through the day with a high of 56 degrees. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, WPR.